This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Moshe Chaim Luzzatto is talking about different aspects of the Ribbono Shel Olam's supervision, you know. But remember, the main concept of the supervision is what goes after a person's acts. Because really there's supervision before a person does anything, and there's supervision, hashgacha, after a person does something, you know. So the concept of supervision before a person does anything, right, which he will talk about a little later, next parak actually, is the concept of the setup, the assignment of a person, you see. And there's a whole concept of what the Ribbono Shel Olam does, is he assigns each neshama to a specific situation or predicament, as you want to, we can call it, you know. And based on that assignment, then he looks to see what you do, and then afterwards he judges you. So that's the second supervision that he does. So in a certain sense, you're always under the supervision, the hashgacha, of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, before you do anything, and after you've done something. And of course, certainly the main hashgacha is that, you know, after you've done something in this world, and then of course you have the ongoing supervision, which is eternal into Olam Haba. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is always looking at you, he's always evaluating you, you know. There's no such thing as being free, you know, of the overview of God. No such thing, you know. Let's put this way, he's got his eye on you totally, completely, you know, like I say, before you enter the world, after you enter the world in a particular situation, whatever the assignment is, then after you've done what you have to do, then he judges you. And then, of course, the consequences of the judgment is Olam Haba, or annihilation, you know, and so on. So that's a very important concept, is that every single being, from the largest to the smallest, ants, anything, is always under the supervision of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a very important idea, and so on, you know.
What's the definition of
Hashgacha Klolus? Hashgacha Klolus is what's called a general supervision, you know. And in certain ways, there's an argument, you know, is there such a thing as Hashgacha Klolus, general, where each individual member of the species is evaluated, you know. Or are there beings, you know, that are not, that each individual is not evaluated, but rather, you know, they are subject to events that have to happen to them based on the survival of the entire species.
So, how you see, if Hashem is supervising every being from the biggest to the smallest, then how does that fit in with Hashgacha Klolus, general supervision?
Well, they would say that there is no general supervision. They would say there's only Hashgacha Pratis on everything. There's no such thing as any being, any creature, not being evaluated based on its own acts.
So the other side of the argument that said there is Hashgacha Klolus, they say that Hashem is not involved at all, or just Hashem?
No, Hashem is always involved, but is he involved specifically for that organism?
This ant. Hashem is, we learned way back in the beginning that Hashem anyway recreates creation every instant.
So that
would automatically mean that each ant is being recreated like a slide every moment.
No, but you're into the what determines their existence. I'm into the supervision of that creature. You're into what makes it be.
That makes it be, but the supervision of this particular ant.
You know, what is God's interaction with that ant?
That's the concept of Hashgacha. Here at this time, doing this thing, this particular ant is only because Hashem wants a certain environment.
Yes.
That this species should be perceived or if affect the environment in a certain way.
Yes.
This ant particularly needs to be here at this time.
Yeah, but does that mean, yeah.
I need a swarm here.
Yeah, but a swarm here, or he looks at each individual ant,
right.
That ant has to be here.
Right, but every ant is placed for,
you know,
the
what I'm
benefit
saying?
Of the swarm.
Every ant, certainly, yeah. But anyway, that's a different topic in terms of, you know, the clothes. It's an argument.
That's,
you know, it's not one, there's a machlekes here.
As well as the Rambam and...
yeah,
Rambam. Is the Mashiach, what the Rambam holds. The Baal Shem Tov held every leaf.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And the side it falls, as Shachar practice.
Where it falls, what it falls, how it falls.
And the ant on the leaf.
Everything is super directed.
Yeah. So, that's Rambam, how does the king of Yifor? How does he hold in that machlekes?
It would seem that the Ramchal would hold that. That what's called is the hashgocha ishus. There is a personal hashgocha. It would seem that, you know. But anyway, yeah. But anyway,
example is Yehuda's name.
I want to get into the Ramchal. What?
The perfect example is Yehuda's name has Yud K Vot K in it.
Why is that a perfect?
That name with God's.
No. Everybody admits that a human has direct total hashgokh, right?
Born,
we're not talking about
that name.
No, but we're not talking about people. We're talking about creatures like ants, insects. You know that's where the arguments are. Nobody denies the fact that a human being, whether it be goy or Jew, does have hashgokh protus. Everybody admits to that. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway. What's what the Ramchal says here is that at the end of a person's life, okay, Olam Habo is a spiritual place, okay. That's fact one. Fact two: to get to Olam Habo, he needs to be prepared for a spiritual existence. That we know. Fact three, the way he prepares himself for a spiritual existence, because the existence in Olam Haba is not physical, it's not material, physical, it is spiritual, then he has to be spiritual. You see, if you want to join a club, you know what I'm saying, then you have to be able to do what that club does. The club called Olam Haba is purely spiritual, so you need to be spiritual. If you in no way have become spiritual in Olam Hazeh, right, you won't get into Olam Haba. You see, it's like a requirement, you know, to join the club, there's a certain requirement, you know. Now, the Rav Hashem judges each person. Now, there is a certain minimum amount of spirituality that you have to have achieved, and that will enable you to get into Olam Haba. Because there is a spiritual level in Olam Haba that is minimal. It is a threshold. If you are below that, even if you're spiritual, but if you are below the spiritual level of Olam Haba, then you can't get in. There is a minimum, yes. And therefore, you need to be spiritual at a certain minimum. Now, what does that mean, minimum? It means that you have to have done a certain amount of things that will enable you to be spiritual and therefore experience Olam Haba, which is a spiritual place. But what takes place in Olam Haba? The answer is attachment to God, you see. Because the Baruch Hashem, although he's not spiritual per se, God is beyond spirituality, but Olam Haba experience is spiritual, you know. In any case, so in order to attach to God in Olam Haba, you have to be spiritual at a certain level. Like I said, if you're not that, then you don't get Olam Haba. If you are that, then you get Olam Haba. So there's a cutoff point. That's a very important idea. The concept that there is a spiritual threshold for Olam Haba. So it's possible for somebody to be spiritual, but it's not spiritual enough to enjoy dvekus, which is the experiencing of the divine directly. You see, now, we don't know what that cutoff point is, but obviously, what Ramchal is saying is that there is a cutoff point, which is interesting, you know. So obviously, you have to strive to be as ruchni, as spiritual as possible, you know, because there is a cutoff point. Now the question is, what is spirituality? What does it mean to be spiritual? You know, and there's so many different views of what that means, you know. It's like, a guy says, you know, I went to this concert, you know, and they were playing this music, and boy, was it a spiritual experience. You know, that kind of stuff, you know. It's amazing what people think is spiritual, you see. And therefore, in a certain sense, it needs a definition. What does it mean to be spiritual, you know? Can listening to a concert be spiritual?
Music could affect your emotions.
Oh, nobody denies that. But there are people that call spirituality so many different things. You know, music. Guy can say, you know, I saw this painting, a boy, this painting made me spiritual. I heard a lecture, you know. I heard the lecture and that really took me off to become spiritual. The real question is, what is spirituality? Ultimately,
out of body experiences aren't necessarily spiritual either.
No. So that's what I want to explain.
David played a harp so we could get into a prophetic experience.
And Gruss,
yeah, but the question is, what? What?
The Grua.
It says?
The Shar Nagina, that's the highest. You know, Shir HaMalos, it's like music brings you to the highest Shar.
It brings you, but what is spirituality? That is the question. You know, what Toma, what brings you there, you know? What exactly is it mean to be spiritual, you know? And the idea to that, you know, as far as we're concerned, you know, to look at it, you know. Well, first, let's take a look at this, okay? There are physical experiences. We know that. You know, you eat a great meal, right? Traveling, there are many physical experiences which are clearly physical. They're bodily, right? That's what it means to be, physical experience. There's also emotional experiences, obviously, because man has an emotional dimension to him, right? You know, all kinds of emotions, you know, there's love, you know, there's kindness, there's a lot of emotions, you know, gentility,
play a marching song to go into battle, which gets you ready to fight.
Yeah. Anyway, there are clearly emotions which somebody could identify as spiritual, but they're not. They are emotional experiences. You know, no. It's because man is composed of many dimensions: emotional. He's composed of emotion, right? So he has emotional experiences, right?
Cognitive.
What was that?
Cognitive.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Then there's intellectual experiences, right? You know, you're learning something, you're reading something. You're learning a Gemara. And all of a sudden you have this tremendous feeling, wow, you feel great. So that's basically an emotional experience that is fed by a cognitive experience. You know, there are intellectual pleasures. You know, if you're working on a problem and all of a sudden you see the answer, you've solved it, you know, there's a tremendous emotional satisfaction. But it's emotional, you see. And so therefore you can have physical experiences, you can have emotional experiences, like I said. You can also have, like I say, intellectual or cognitive experiences, right? So you can certainly have all those, you know. Then there are experiences which are not physical, really. They're not emotional and they're not cognitive. What are they? Mental. Yes. There are experiences that you can have where you can exist on a mental plane. It's a lot of psychic stuff, you know. For instance, Let's say, it's not common really, obviously, but let's say in the yogis, you know, these guys, right? They meditate, right? Okay, and when they meditate, what happens is that they are able to shut down thinking, feeling, and bodily sensations. Actually shut it down, you see? And all of a sudden, they become what's called an intensified sense of self, you know? And they experience something, which is not, it's not, like I say, it's not bodily sensations, it's not emotions, and it's not thinking. They can stop all that. And they just think about themselves, their ego. What is that, you see? So what that is a mental experience. Because a person does have a mental area of his life. You know, there are many things that we have which we don't really realize. For instance, you know, radio waves. What is that? It's part of the physical universe, right? But I wouldn't call it physical. It's really energy. Is energy physical? It's part of the world, so it's part of the physical universe. But it's not a physical thing, although clearly it interacts with physical things because your radio comes on, right? You're actually taking the energy of these electromagnetic waves and somehow reproducing them and you're listening and so on, you know? But there are many experiences which are mental because we have the mental capacity to experience different phenomena. But that's not spiritual. A yogi guy meditating and achieving a tremendous sense of individuality or ego or sense of self is not having a spiritual experience. He is having a mental experience. And I feel that's their mistake. Because since it's not the regular physical experience, then it must be a spiritual experience. Mistake. There is what's called a mental experience. Then the question is, what does it mean to be spiritual? What's that mean?
When you're praying, that's spiritual.
Well, no, you're praying. What do you mean? I don't know what you mean. That's spiritual. It's not spiritual. You know, you pray and you daven and that's it. What does it mean to become spiritual? What does that mean? You know, in this world, basically, you know, what spirituality really is, in many ways, is a cognitive, intellectual understanding, you see, because you can never leave the physical. You're in your body and that's the end of it, you know. But what you can achieve is understanding of certain ideas, and that is spiritual.
Why is that different than why? You're getting to the difference between understanding Torah and understanding...
Because man's thinking does produce consequences. It does.
You didn't really experience the spirituality.
No, you can't because you're physical. You can't experience...
All you did was maybe touch it and create a consequence. You didn't actually experience spirituality.
No. You can't become... You're in a physical universe. You can't be spiritual.
I am Navu.
Who?
What about Navu?
Ah, Navu is different. Navu is a true spiritual experience. But even that goes through the physical senses. You can't divorce yourself from your physical body.
The answer to how to spirituality is that we don't.
What was that?
The answer to the question, what does it mean for us to experience spirituality? The answer is we don't.
Not really. Because you can't, you're physical.
So even though the Buddha's consciousness goes up to, let's say, Yetzirah, like you said, Yetzirah by Nevuah. Where'd you go to Yetzirah or Bria?
No, by Nevuah, yeah. You can stand in Bria,
okay,
and
so
look into Atzilus.
In Bria, but not really.
Well, the question is, what is he experiencing? What does a Navi experience?
Right, so you're saying that he's at best experienced a mental state with cognitive consequences. He's never actually experiencing Bria. It's like he's touching Bria with gloves.
Well, he's... Let's see what it is. You know, look, if you're a Navi, right? What a Navi does, and this is interesting, you know, by going through a certain procedure. He's Mechavan Shemus. There's a whole procedure that a Navi does. Once he does that, right, then what happens is that the Shechina sends down a Shefa. It sends out a true spiritual force, of which we don't know really what that is. We're talking about the Divine Presence, right? In other words, this Navi, everybody in fact, is connected to the Shechina. That's your root, ultimately. So what happens is because of the procedure that he's going through, right, he generates a Shefa, which is a divine vibration. I'll use that as for lack of a better way to say it, He will create a divine vibration, which let's call it a Shefa, that will come down. And remember, it's his root neshama. It will come down, right?
But the Shefa is from his root neshama.
The Shefa is from his root neshama that is connected to the Shechina. So it all starts from the Shechina, goes into his root, where he's rooted into that Shechina, right? And he will generate a specific, for lack of a better word, vibration, energy. What?
Signal.
Well, it's a signal, but let's call it a vibration. It's a it's a divine vibration that is truly spiritual, because we have no idea what it is, and what that will do will impinge on his neshama. You see, now his neshama will maintain that vibration, right, and that will impinge on his nefesh tachtoina. Everybody has two souls. Two different dimensions. One dimension is called a nefesh elyona. It means the true, what we understand to be the true neshama, the true soul, right? The real neshama is called nefesh elyona. Okay? So that divine vibration will hit and impinge on that neshama. Then the neshama will then send out or carry that divine vibration, so to speak. And that will impinge on what's called the animal soul. Everybody has a nefesh tachtoina, or else they wouldn't exist. The nefesh tachtoina is what allows you to live. You can call it the life force, perhaps. But everybody has that nefesh tachtoina, you see. Now, that will impinge on the nefesh tachtoina. Then what will happen is the nefesh tachtoina, right, will immediately vibrate the imagination, and he will see a movie. That movie is the nevuah. In other words, whatever the Shechina wants to send to this guy, let's say an upcoming war or an upcoming, good tidings, right? So all of a sudden, those good tidings, whatever they are, let's say a war, it will impinge on the nefesh tachtoina. And that, which is the Nefesh Bahamas, whatever, and that will influence his imagination, the Koich HaDimyon, okay? And number one, and he will see, one, he will have a visual representation of the Nevuah, and number two, he will have a mental, intellectual interpretation of the Nevuah, of the, whatever the message is, you see? But it's going through him as a person, you see. In other words, in some way, the spiritual force, right, he becomes the receiver, but the actual message or signal that he receives, in a certain sense, is physical. But it will be visual, it will be intellectual, concept and insight, you see. And that's the Nevuah.
Yeah.
You see, therefore, we cannot experience true spirituality, because we don't live in that world. We are here. Nevuah is the perfect example of the interface between a spiritual experience, so to speak, and the physical reception of that spiritual experience. So there's an interaction between the two. But what the person ultimately experiences is he experiences the spiritual force or vibration through his physical body. And that itself is incredible, because we don't even know what that is. I mean, what the Navi felt was beyond belief. What the Navi felt was the greatest access and the greatest feeling of spirituality. But it was through the body. Look, the body itself can have many different feelings, experiences. You know, there are different levels of pleasure. You see, what the level of pleasure, if you use that word, that a Navi experiences, we don't know unless you're a Navi. But it was different. It wasn't like anything you've ever experienced. You see, it's an experience, like I say, through the physical medium of the body. But what that was is unknown to us because we're not Navim. But it was the closest thing you can get to spiritual experience.
Like the Zohar was the same thing as from the other side?
Yeah. Avoid the Zohar, well, the...
That's not Avodah Zohar,
that's Kishuf. I mean, that's a different department. You know, you're dealing with the Satan and the Sitra Achra and so on, you know. Avodah Zohar has got an idol in front of you, right? And you're worshipping the idol. You know what I'm saying?
What was the point of that?
Well, what's interesting about that is that, you know, we don't understand what that drive was. To us, it looks like absolute nonsense. You know, why in the world would a guy sit there and worship an idol? Was he crazy? To us, it looks like they're a bunch of maniacs, you know? However, as they say, Rav Ashi once gave a shiur. He's famous, you know? I don't get into it, but once gave a shiur, and he indicated that his chiddush was greater than Menashe. Anyway, so whatever, that night, whatever, Menashe, the king, was terrible. Came to him in a dream, and he said, "You think you're smarter than me?" And he asked him a question, which Rav Ashi could not answer. So Rav Ashi said to him, "Wait a minute, if you're so smart, what are you running after Avodah Zarah for? You know, if you're that intelligent, why are you worshipping idols? Which is ridiculous." So Menashe told him, "Hey, if you were in my generation, you would have picked up the hem of your garments, right? And you would run to be over Avodah Zarah. You'd run. You know, so let's take it easy in that sense, you know. Don't think you're better than me, you know. Now, what does that mean? Rav Ashi would have run to be over Avodah Zarah? Yeah, Quantum and Ashi would have run. We don't know what that drive is because it's been exterminated by the Chazal. They destroyed the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah. But to get an inkling of it, apparently, you know, it's man had this incredible drive to connect to the spiritual. You know, like we don't know what that is. Today, man has an incredible drive to run from the spiritual. If you think about it, what's going on today? I mean, everybody's out of here. You know, everybody's running for the physical, and they don't even want to touch the spiritual. You know, but in those days, apparently, because then it would be an equal nisayon. You know. Everybody had this incredible drive to connect to Ruchnius. So therefore, to them, Ruchnius, you know, even if they had to make up the Ruchnius, which is what they did, you know, they had to imagine the Avodah Zarah is a real God, you know what I'm saying? You know, and just worship the idol, and so on. So it's astounding that he's making up the Ruchnius. So what are you doing that for? Because he had this incredible, it's a taiva that we cannot relate with, you know. That he had to connect to Ruchnius, spirituality, you see? But anyway...
That was taken away. What about
it was exterminated. It's more than, yeah, it was, you know, and because they... What?
Does Ruach HaKodesh still exist?
Yes. That's different.
How's that
Ruach HaKodesh, remember, there is spiritual... Remember... There is experiencing spirituality, and then there are the consequences of spirituality. Ruach HaKodesh is a consequence of spirituality. Instead of Nevuah, which is a whole different type of experience, many times a person, you know, will just know something. He knows it, and he knows it's true, and he knows it certainly. That's Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is an incredibly watered-down version of Nevuah. But it's basically the same thing. where you know something to be true, you know. And the way you know it is the same idea. It comes from the Shekhinah and so on. But it's not, there is no attachment to the Shekhinah. That was what was so special about Nevuah. In Nevuah, you were connected to the Divine Presence, to the Shekhinah. And therefore, there was that whole chain of events that ultimately gave you the message of Nevuah. You see, Ruach HaKodesh, you're not connected to the Shekhinah. You could have Ruach HaKodesh because some malach decided to tell you something.
We call it intuition now?
What?
Is that intuition?
No. It's spiritual intuition. Because it's ruchni. In the sense that it's the consequences of a ruchni, a spiritual mechanism. That's how you get it. No, there are many tzaddikim that have Ruach HaKodesh. You know what I'm saying? Which means that they know things that you couldn't possibly know, and not because, and they could not possibly know. I mean, there are many stories, you know, of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who clearly has Ruach HaKodesh, and certainly the Chazon Ish. There are many Gedolim of Chofetz Chaim, they clearly have Ruach HaKodesh, which means that they knew things because they were attached to Ruchnias, the spiritual dimensions. A Novi is attached to the Shekhinah itself. And that's how he knows. You know, Ruach HaKodesh, like I said, is a watered-down version. But what I'm trying to say is that, but we don't experience spiritual experiences. What we can experience, okay, is physical experiences that are generated by spiritual domain. That's just like Nevuah. He experienced it in a physical way, his feelings and his thinking and his seeing and all that, but it was generated by a spiritual reality.
Didn't you tell us that
anyway,
Ruach HaKodesh, there are two forms of Ruach HaKodesh. One of them is the true Ruach HaKodesh, and one of them is the what we have today that people misname.
Yeah.
True Ruach HaKodesh was basically like Rabbi Shmuel was able to kind of go halfway, meaning he was
true.
Able to up.
There's Nevuah, which is prophecy. The level below that is called Ruach HaKodesh, true Ruach HaKodesh. And then what that was is, let's say Rabbi Shmuel, you know, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol or whatever, what they would do is meditate on a divine name, again, Yehudim, Shemus and all that, right? And all of a sudden, they would be connected to the spiritual worlds, not necessarily Shekhinah, right? And the connection, however it works, the energy, let's say, of a certain spiritual world, let's say, would vibrate, that's the only way I can describe it, it would hit the guy, and that guy would see into that oilam. Like Rabbi Shmuel, when he went up, right, what did he do? He all of a sudden, the vibration will remove the physical barrier, and he was able to see, look into oilam Yitzira. That's how far, that's how high he went. And then he saw a man, wasn't a man, it was a malach, and he spoke to the malach, because he wanted to find out if the gzera, the decree of the 10 martyrs, if it can be cancelled, annulled. No way. That's what the malach said. Isha, you know, lubush abadim, mecharia pargad, and so on, you know. That's Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is the ability to connect to a spiritual dimension. But again, you only can see it through the physical capacities of whatever you have. But you are looking into a spiritual dimension.
So when did you stand in Yetzira or Bria? Well, so that's not nowadays Ruach HaKodesh. Just
well, that means how many partitions were there between you and that oilam?
What's the different experience? But whatever you were experiencing, it's like a guy walks into is walking down a New York City street. And then walks into a shul. I mean, in our watered-down world, it's something. It's a different experience. Or a Yom Kippur. Let's see. You walk down New York City Street A on a Tuesday, and B, you're on Yom Kippur. So those are two completely different, and one's more spiritual, so to speak. So that's what it was like. We're still interacting with spirituality, experiencing physicality, and experiencing physicality.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But our experience is completely different. So that's what it was like. That's what you're saying. The difference between walking down New York City Street on a Tuesday and a Yom Kippur in Shul is what that was like.
It's a different physical experience, yes, you know. Prophecy, Nevuah, a person would see into Atzilus.
But we only see the physical screen.
But again, it's only through the physical instrumentality that you have. The conduits have to be physical. But his vision and his emotional feeling is because he looked into the world of Atzilus, which is the world of God. He could actually look into it. And the difference between where would he be standing meant how many different partitions, barriers, you know, were between him and the vision, you know. That depended on how great of a Novi he was. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest of all Nevi'im. What does that mean? That means he was able to stand at the end of what's called Olam Bria. So that one of there's Zatzilus, which is where God is. Bria is where the throne is. And then the Neshamas originate from that. And there's some Malachim there. Then you have Yetzirah, which is basically all Malachim. And then you have this world, Asiya, and so on. And then you have what's called the Olam HaShafel, which is this world, physical world. A Navi, by doing what he did, was able to stand at the end, all the way up. He was able to look into, from the standpoint of Yetzirah, which means Moshe Rabbeinu had no barrier in front of him, which is incredible. And he had an unbelievable clear vision. But he looked into Atzilus. He wasn't in Atzilus, means he wasn't in the world of God, so to speak, but he was like right outside the house with no barrier and no door. So therefore he could look into what's called Atzilus, which is, let's say, the God's residence. But there was no barriers, no door. Everybody else had doors, barriers, and so on, depending on how great of a Navi you were. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Navi, because he had no barriers other than the fact that he wasn't in the house. So his barrier was he was out. Yeah, that's aspect. Wait, Halemir. So that he had no barriers. But what he did have was he wasn't in the house. It wasn't in. So, you know. So let's say that was the minimal of vision or clarity you could have. Everybody else stood in Bria, which is outside, let's say, on the lawn, right? And the question was, how many different shields or barriers were there that the vision, the vibration, had to go through? You see, finally, you get to Yecheskel, Anovi, you know, by the time you got to him, what happened is he was no longer on the lawn, right? He stood in Olam Yetzirah, you see? But he could still look into the house. Every Navi, that's what prophecy is. You can look into Atzilus, you can look into the house where God is. It's incredible perception. The question is, how many barriers were there in front of you? So the average Navi was in the lawn, let's say the lawn of the guy's house. Right? Yecheskel already, prophecy had so descended that he was standing outside in the street, right? And he could look into the house, but he had to look through the street, through the lawn, to look into the house. And his vision was beyond belief. Because the whole Kabbalistic Maisim Merkava, which is the whole framework of Kabbalah, he's the one who revealed. Can you imagine what he saw? That he's revealing the whole Kabbalistic structure and framework and so on. And he's standing outside in the street, looking through the lawn, looking through the gates, the lawn, and so on. So we cannot even imagine, that's Yecheskel. We cannot imagine, you know, Yeshaya Novi or Yirmiyo. Forget about Moshe Rabbeinu. We have no understanding of what that vision is. Yes.
What happened there?
There, that's because the Rebbe Shlomo removed the doors, and he removed everything. It's not that she saw more. It doesn't mean that she could have been in Yetzirah looking in. But what the Baruch Hashem did is he removed an enormous amount of barriers. So that's so. Therefore, but this is all Nevuah because they're all looking into the house. The question is, how far back are they? You see, now Ruach HaKodesh. Now is, you don't look into the house. The house is shut, you see, and the lawn is shut. You can no longer get into the lawn to look into the house. That's out. Ruach HaKodesh is where you can stand on the street, right, and look into the street.
The street or the lawn?
No, you can't look at the lawn. You cannot see Bria, you're outside. But what you can do is stand in Yetzirah, which is a street, and talk to the beings, spiritual beings, in the street. That you can do, you see? And those are the angels. So Ruach HaKodesh, in many ways, is an unbelievable come-down of Nevuah. However, you can still look into the spiritual world called Yetzirah. I mean, you can stand in it, so to speak, and talk to denizens, residents of Olam Yetzirah. And that's what he did. That's Rabbi Akiva, you know, the four who entered Pardes. Pardes was really Olam Yetzirah, Ruach HaKodesh. It was Olam Yetzirah, and they were able to converse with Malachim. That's what they did, you see. But today, we don't have that anymore. The primary reason why we cannot look into the house, that's out. And we certainly cannot even do Ruach HaKodesh, that's out, right, is because of Tumah. Well, for the main reason also, we're not great enough, we don't know the procedures, you see. But part of the problem is Tumah. We are unclean in the sense of spiritual. We're Tameh. And if you are Tameh, you cannot in any way reach into a spiritual domain. You cannot see into a spiritual domain. The Tumah does not allow you.
What made Ben Azai go crazy, go mad in Pardes?
That's different. Now you're asking me one of the events of that, you know. I'm just trying to describe you the different visions that you can have of what you can see and so on, you know.
So the Chofetz Chaim's Ruach HaKodesh is not that at all?
No. Nobody has Ruach HaKodesh, that type of Ruach HaKodesh. Remember, Ruach HaKodesh is really a smaller form of Nevuah. Nobody has that. However, what today people do have, okay, is there is a thing called Gil Elio. I mean, there are connections to the spiritual world. If you're Zoicha, the Elio comes to visit you. You know?
Happen,
what?
Which can happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Amagid.
Yeah. Who?
Amagid.
Wait. So one of the spiritual phenomena, so to speak, that you can have today, you can have, like I say, Gil Elio is one. You can have a Magid, or the Ramchal had a Magid. A Magid is an angel, whatever, that speaks to you through your own throat. All of a sudden, somebody takes a hold of your throat, and he's talking to you, right? And he's revealing divine secrets, you know? So that is possible to have. The third form of spirituality is a prophetic dream. There are people who have dreams which can be prophetic-like. It's called light prophecy, you know, and it's where they dream of something, and that's a real spiritual experience. Again, but that happens because, you know, you, in some way you are connected to a spiritual world, and it comes down. But all of these things can only be experienced through the physical body, physical dimension, even though they are, you know, the source of the information is a spiritual domain. However, the conduits, the mechanism, is physical, you see. So that's a very important idea of how. So these are the ways you can experience physical, spiritual phenomena, and so on. You know,
Moshe on Har Sinai.
Moshe on Har Sinai. What about him?
I think he once told indicated that was different.
Yes, Moshe on Har Sinai. Now remember, most prophets they're grounded in this world. Yeah, they got two feet planted on the planet. You know, it's their mind that takes off. You see, right? But remember, they're still here. Moshe Rabbeinu by Mount Torah left the planet. That means his physical body, actually probably physically he left the planet. We don't know how it works, you know. And he actually not only saw into those spiritual worlds, right? But he was there. That's like, what? You know? That's why he can converse with the Malachim. That's why for 40 days he didn't eat or drink. Why didn't he eat or drink? You see, prophets must eat or drink, right? But since Moshe Rabbeinu went into an Olam Yetzirah, in Olam Yetzirah, the physical becomes neutralized. You no longer have to eat or drink to survive. It becomes a neutral piece of matter. It's interesting. All drives are gone. So he's standing in Yetzirah, you're actually in Yetzirah with his body, in Yetzirah, with no physical drives, doesn't have to eat, drink, or whatever, and obviously the body is sustained by its physical, by its spiritual attachments, and so on. And he's talking to Malachim. There's a whole dialogue going on. You know, the famous dialogue where they say, well, what do you need the Torah for? We want it, and so on, you know? But that was a, that's an experience that, you know, whoever had that, really. To really to be in that world. And then, of course, the main thing is he came back. You know, most guys who get into that place don't come back. You know, that's, yeah. Well, he didn't come back.
Right.
And he jumped in with the guy's with the son's knife.
He saw all of my body, he didn't want to come out of it.
No, he wasn't one of my brothers. He was Gan Eden probably, but he went in there alive. No, but the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu is he came back.
These guys
go and they stay, you know, and so on, you know, So these are all different types of spiritual experiences. That's true, you know. But remember, in the end, you know, as long as you're here, you will experience all this stuff physically. Now, we don't know what the emotional experience is of experiencing spiritual vibrations. You know what I'm saying? Because something comes down. And that does something to our emotions. You know what I'm saying? We don't know what that is. You know?
So what's left for us today? If we don't have that, how are we going to be spiritual?
No. So here's the idea. Because there are physical sensations, right, which are the consequence of spiritual acts that you do. When a person he davens, tefillah, prayer, right? And he really gets into the prayer where God is actually in front of him in the sense that he really feels he's conversing with God. Okay, you know, that's a very lofty way. You know, most guys, you know, tefillah is used as an experience to travel around the world. And just think about what happened yesterday, tomorrow, I'm taking a trip, next day, you know. But there are certain people that actually can get into prayer where they truly feel as if they're dialoguing or standing in the presence of God. Then they will experience an emotion, you see, which is the consequence of a spiritual event. But we don't know what that is unless you're doing that. Tzaddikim, who are tremendously into mitzvahs, prayer, or and so on, do experience something, you see. But it's not spiritual because we are physical. But it is an emotion or some kind of experience which is ecstatic. That it is. Now, you maybe want to label that as spiritual. Fine. But, you know what I'm saying? But basically, it still has to go through the physical body. You know what I'm saying? But it is an emotion, it's an experience. It's a sensation, whatever it is, right? Which is incredibly ecstatic, you see. So in a certain sense, let's call that spiritual.
Without the experience, it's a ridiculous definition. Putting on tefillin is supposed to connect you directly, right?
Yes.
Won't that do it without getting a
no.
feeling?
No, it won't do that. You know, it won't, you know. It all a great deal depends on the mind, the intention of the person, the focus. Yeah, tefillin can do it if you are focused on the tefillin in terms of what it does and so on. Yeah, but again, it requires your mind. You know, it does. It's not just putting on the box and the straps. It's not going to do it. Although it does trigger what's called iris. It triggers energies, light, energy, divine energies. It does, because that's the whole point of the mitzvah. But the experience itself depends on the mind's focus of what you are doing.
Before you put on tefillin, I read two pages, and it shows me the intent.
Fine.
I should have.
So
that's the intent.
Fine. Again, so are you having it?
I read it, yeah.
Reading and intending are two different things, right? It's two different things. A lot of people read about intent, but there's what's called focus, where you actually enter the world of that thought, and that thought becomes real, not just an imagination kind of thing. But anyway, so a person can experience a spiritual event, but only in the sense of it is an extremely heightened physical feeling. But it has to be physical because we are rooted and connected to the physical body.
So what is the definition in your room for the purpose of the life?
So this, I would say, is the experience of spirituality that we can have. You see, so like saying, in the olden days, it used to be prophecy or the real Ruach HaKodesh. That was the experience of which, but even then, it was a physical experience. But its intensity and its quality is something that is unknown to us, you see. So you could look at that as spirituality. Now, that's the emotional aspect of spirituality, you see. But the real concept of spirituality, in terms of what determines that, is what you think about God. Who do you think God is, you see? And what I was going to say is that the essential determinant of the spiritual thought is the Einod Mavadoi. In other words, that the only thing that truly exists is God, period, in an absolute sense. If you can think about that and focus on that, where it becomes real, you see, then you will experience something which can be said is the consequence of that thought. See, remember, in the end, what you're trying to experience, right, is a very heightened feeling of attachment to God, you see. And there are different ways of generating that. In the old days, it was through Nevuah, prophecy, Ruach HaKodesh, you see. But today you can do that, although it won't be the same experience. But what you can do is focus on the whatever mitzvah you're doing, where it becomes real. Not easy. Where it becomes real. And then you will experience something which is a heightened, extreme physical experience. That's the what you can have. And that's what tzaddikim get. If they get into it, they become what's called vekus. All of a sudden they feel as if they're attaching to God in whatever physical experience that is. But that's what it is. So that physical experience is spirituality. But it has to have something to do with God. But experiencing spirituality as if you were really experiencing spirituality is unknown. And because we're physical beings. But like I say, it is possible to have a spiritual feeling, relatively speaking. Let's call it relative spirituality. The physical body can experience some extreme form of emotion. And we can call that dvekus, or attachment to God, longing for God. That can happen.
Simcha be the natural result of such a dvekus?
Well, simcha is a happiness of...
The atzvus.
Who?
It really couldn't be the opposite. If someone reached that, I would imagine simcha would be the natural outcome.
Joy. To experience...
That depression, you should experience, be down in the dumps.
Well, okay. Yeah, to experience that type of ecstasy and joy. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Look, think about this, right? A guy takes LSD. Think about that, right? Takes LSD or he takes cocaine. I mean, whatever the guy's like. Today...
Oxycodone.
What?
Oxycodone.
Yeah, oxycodone and so on and so forth, they are experiences. And, and people who take that can swear that it's spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So what are they experiencing, really? Because the brain has the capacity, right, to experience unbelievable, pleasurable experiences. What generated that isn't Kedusha. It's not God. It's chemicals. You see? Because if you can invade the brain with a certain chemical molecular structure, guess what? It's going to give you a beyond belief kind of experience, whatever that is. You know, but it must be so intense that everybody's running to get more coke, you see? But that's not spiritual experiences. That is an experience which is generated by a chemical, and it is an incredibly intense experience. That's what it is. You know what I'm saying? I remember I once I think I lifted something that was too heavy, you know, and all of a sudden I had tremendous pain in my side, you know, so I went to the doctor and he gave me codeine with something else, you know. It was codeine, right? I forgot that it has another name. Something with codeine. Anyway, you know, and that was the only time I ever took a narcotic. I mean, it took away the pain. You know, it was incredible. But it wasn't the pain.
Did the rabbi go into Shemayim with
it? No, but what I experienced with that, it not only took away the pain, I mean, that was the real reason. That's why he's prescribing the thing, you know? Because I had this tremendous, and then thank God the pain went away. I mean, after a couple of days. But what was so unusual, and I had never experienced it like that, you know, there was a tremendous sense of relaxation. It was incredible. I've never experienced a physical type of feeling. You know, it was unbelievably pleasurable. I have to say, you know. I took only enough for that couple of days to get rid of the pain of it was a muscle. I probably pulled a muscle, whatever. But I remember I told the doctor, I said, "What was it you gave me?" You know what I'm saying? So, it was like incredible. It's just a pain reliever. It gives you an incredible sense of relaxation. Unbelievable. It was just, I've never had that, you know? You know, I wasn't going to ask him for some more stuff. You know, but I can see why guys are into this. You know, because everybody's tense, everybody's wound up, everybody's going crazy with this world, because he's got all kinds of worries and all that, and you take this kind of stuff, and then you just fly away.
That's why they're legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, that's because the governor wants to take it also. It's usual, you know. But I can say, but this is purely a chemically generated, it's a narcotic. Sense of incredible feeling of pleasure. You know what I'm saying? That was the only time I ever took this stuff, you know? But it was so unique that, you know, anyway.
Someone told me on Shabbos you gotta be happy.
It's what?
Someone told me that on Shabbos you have to be happy. So, how do you do that?
I don't understand what...
Someone told me...
No, I understand what you said, but what does that have to do with what I'm saying?
What it has to do with to induce an emotion just like that.
No, wait, you got to work at it. I mean, you got to you have to really relate to Shabbos. You have to think about Shabbos and to relate to it. And you can get that. I mean, you can, you know, get that if you really connect to that. I have to finish. But what I realized, it's an incredibly... when I took that narcotic, it's when it's an incredible thing, you know. But it's all chemicals, you see. But in the end, it was physical. Come on. Somehow the drug, was it Vicodine? Come on, you know.
Vicodin,
I think it was Vicodin, you know. You know, Vicodin, whatever, you know. But in the end, it was physical. It simply is able to reconfigure sections of the brain, right? That will give you incredible pleasure.
You're still smiling. You know?
It was just so unusual, you know? I can understand that terrible why guys get addicted to this stuff. You know, because it's just like, what it does, it transfers you to another dimension, another reality. It's really what it is emotionally, you know, and it was just incredible, you know? But anyway, but it's still physical. It's not spiritual, right? Even though guys would swear that when they take coke, or this called Vicodine, whatever, right? Oh, I'm having a spiritual experience. What they're really having is a beyond belief narcotic experience that just reconfigures some of the chemicals in the brain, which the brain can give you, and that's it. You know, I remember they once did an experiment. It was famous with rats, you know, where they hooked up electrodes to the rat's brain, you know, the pleasure centers, you know, and the rat would only experience that if he pressed the lever. You know what I'm saying? And if you pressed the lever, it would connect, right? And they hooked it up to the pleasure centers in the brain, and wow, zingo, you know? And what happened was, with the rat, he died. Why? Because he just kept pressing the lever. You see? And he didn't take out any time to eat.
Yeah, there was one for food.
And he, no, but who cares about food? You know? But it was physical, but it just shows you what the brain is capable of, you know? And so on, you know? That's what I'm saying. That but if you generate ruchnistiger spiritual reasons and so on, you know, because of an attachment to mitzvahs, you will experience something which is, again, incredible joy, but it's more than that. It's an emotion of an unbelievable attachment to God.
Awesome.
And it can happen now, here, but it takes a lot of, work to do that. But that's the spiritual experience that you can have, you know. So what a spiritual experience basically is that the generator of that experience, right, is a thinking about God, about the mitzvahs, about anything you want to think, but it has to be God-related, you see, because then the repercussions of that is not just experiencing this spiritual feeling, so to speak, but it will trigger incredible amount of light in the spheres and so on, and bring tremendous amount of tikkun to the universe and so on, you know?
If you're not on that level, just doing the mitzvah isn't even a diminished level, you're reaching something, no?
Yes, yeah, you are. The problem is most people don't think when they do a mitzvah. Think about it, it's rote. Most people, when they do mitzvahs, do it out of routine or rote. There's no thinking, you see. In order to generate these types of feelings, right, you have to be in the reality of the mitzvah. You have to think about what you're doing, to understand the mitzvah, the greatness of the mitzvah, and so on. You have to think spiritual ideas, and then you can experience these things. Look, tzaddikim experience this. People who are oivdim, oived, people who work at this, do experience these incredible spiritual experiences, which are physical but relatively spiritual. That's what I want to bring out, you know. But they do experience this, yeah.
Before
there's a tremendous... anyway.
Before you read anything, you got to say your blessing.
Yes.
Saying that, I know God created this, thank you.
Yes, but there are people who are focused on the bracha. When they say, blessed are you God, right? That created the fruit of the tree or whatever, right? Mm. They are thinking of God, you see? And they think of God and they are saying, am I really blessing him? Am I really thanking him? And they are thanking him. You see, look, the Gemara brings out Chassidim Rishonim used to meditate for 3 hours before they would daven Shmoneh Esrei. Why? Because they didn't just want to say the words, they wanted to focus on the reality of davening Shmoneh Esrei, which is standing in front of God, right? There's an audience. Most people don't understand. When you are davening, you're in an audience. You've now entered the throne room. You see, most people don't think about that when they daven Shmoneh Esrei, right? Mm-hmm. But what they think about is that they're in the throne room. But if you can make that into a reality, you have ascended to a place that most people have never ascended to. If you can actually see the throne room and actually feel, make into a concentrated reality that you are talking to God, it's a different Shmoneh Esrei. Yeah. Anyway, but that's the idea. That's how you can do it. You need to take the mind into the mitzvah, the kavana, and if you do it often enough, you will achieve a tremendous ecstatic experience, which you can label as spiritual, relatively speaking. But it's still goes to the physical body. But it's generated by an attachment to God through the mind. Very important idea. But it requires a lot of work. You see?
When I say Shmona Esrei, and I take three steps back, I intellectually, I'm saying to myself, I'm leaving Olam Hazeh, and when I take three steps forward, in my mind, I say, now I'm approaching God.
Okay.
To talk to him.
Good, very
but
good.
It's intellectual. I'm not like, you know, up there in the... But of the world.
But no. But the question is, how real do you think you're in? You could think something, but it's only a thought. You want to make that thought a reality. That takes work. That's why tefillah is an avodah. You know, if tefillah is an avodah shebelev. Why is an avodah shebelev? What do you mean belev? What it really means, right, is that when you daven, you say the words. But that's not the avodah of tefillah, is just to say the words. It's to make the event of davening real. And that means you have to focus with your mind on what you're doing, and eventually it becomes a reality. Yeah, that's what happens, right? And when you can daven, where the mind has achieved that this experience is a reality, you are up there. And the feelings that you have then is superlative. It's incredible. You see? But it needs mind. That's why it's avodah shebelev. It's an avodah in the heart, which means basically the mind. You need to make the tefillah a reality. That takes a while to do. It takes real focus. What was that?
That you're in the sound throne room. That reality.
Yeah, that's the reality.
You're
correct, yeah.
You're
that's why many times it's very disheartening to see, you know, guys come late. How many guys come late for davening? You know what I'm saying? Think about that. You know, they come in after 15 minutes, 20 minutes. The guy's up to Yishtabach, right? And the guy just walks in and now he's putting on film, right? To tell you, what are you doing? How are you going to get into the reality of Shmoneh Esrei when you just walked in by Yishtabach, right? I mean, you know, 5 minutes by Shmoneh Esrei, meanwhile you're putting on your film. How do you do that? And the problem is because these people don't understand that they are in the throne room with an audience of God, you know? The question is, if they had a meeting, you know, with some high, you know, king of some country, would they come late? Of course not. It's a reality there, you know? But people come late all the time. I see guys coming late like clockwork. You know, they always come late. I understand that, you know. Either you're taking tefillah to what it really is, so what are you doing coming late? You can't possibly have any kavanah davening Shmoneh Esrei when you're starting to put on film by Yishtabach. It's over with, you know. Because to them, davening is really just lip service. It's really what it is. If they were honest with themselves, they would just say, hey, it's a ritual, I just got to get through it. Right? But for those people who take davening seriously, you know, I feel a guy should come at least 20 minutes before the davening starts. Because you want to get into what's called the mental framework of where you are and what you want to do.
Sometimes
you know, but
you have it and sometimes you don't.
That's true, but that's the avodah. The avodah is eventually, you'll always have it. Because the mind gets used to an experience over and over again. Anyway, I'm trying to explain what spirituality is, you know, by going through the different prophetic states, Nevuah and Ruach Kodesh, and so on, you know. But ultimately, like I said, it is a physical experience, but there are incredible amount of variations of a physical experience, you see. And the one that is spiritual, the one physical experience that is spiritual, is that way if you focus very heavily on the reality of the mitzvah, then that physical experience, I believe, is truly different than the other physical experiences. But it does require work.
Can goyim get there?
Yes. A goy can become spiritual, no question about that. God has not denied anybody who wants to talk to him. It's an interesting thing, you know. As it says, it's in Tonet Ve'elio, a goy can come, a goy, well, we know that because, you know, Bilam. But that was Tumah. a goy can become a Navi. Because he has a Nefesh Elyona. He doesn't have the other parts, but once he has a Nefesh Elyona, which means he has a real spiritual soul, that's it. Then he is what's called a member. He could be a member of Olam Haba. You know?
What way did he reach the level of Moshe Rabbeinu?
Who? In terms of the access to God.
He was in real looking at the...
From the Derech Tumah. Yeah, that's why it says, Lekom... but there was a Navi as great as him in his ability to access the divine. That was Bilam.
The ability in music, how did the music help him reach Nirvana?
Who?
Navi could bring me the harp. The one didn't have it, the Maisha with the kings, Jehoshaphat, brought the Navi in, he said, play me music to bring the prophetic state.
Yeah, because music is one of the... music in many ways is like an opioid. An opioid can attack the brain or and can reconfigure the brain, right, chemically, right? Music can do that also. There's some... many times, if you hear certain types of music, you can transcend, yeah. Music has the ability, that sound waves have the ability which will reconfigure, in many ways... whatever's happening in the brain.
The neshama or the brain?
What?
The music's touching the brain or the neshama?
It has to go through the brain. But music can do it.
There is, and so praying to God.
Look, music. Music can bring you to tears.
There is intense praying to God, what you're talking about. But it's taking place at Las Vegas blackjack tables. There are people praying to God intensely.
Yeah, but they're praying to God to sin. That's the difference.
So
I don't think God's listening to them.
He hears them, but he ain't listening.
He is.
So what was your definition for spirituality?
Is a physical experience of intensity, a certain type of physical experience that comes as a result of being generated by the mind focusing on God.
You described the effect of spirituality.
Yes.
But you didn't define spirituality.
No, I did. I said that is the spiritual experience you can have. So it is spiritual. Through the physical medium, that's, you know.
Yeah, but what is spirituality?
What is an attachment to God?
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.